Okay. So I'm Ira. I'm here not presenting on behalf of Red Hat deliberately, or really on behalf of Samba team. I'm here to talk about release planning for Samba. And I might do a brief who am I. I've been a software engineer a while, done a lot of systems programming and systems engineering. And I've actually spent a fair amount of time studying software release processes and release cycles at several notable companies. But I'll note that none of them endorse this talk. This is my opinion. I'm not going to put anybody's name next to it. I won't even put the Samba's team's name next to it. This is what I think. Okay? But realize that I've learned some lessons, and I've been through a few places. The first question you have to ask yourself whenever you're dealing with software, or actually any venture where you're going to produce a result, is why? Why are you starting on the journey? And it may seem a little meta to start here, and I'll admit it, but this is actually a very important question to ask because it motivates a lot of the next set of questions that are going to come. Okay, you know, money, enjoyment, prestige. Somebody has a gun to your head? Seriously? I mean, people have to do stuff under duress. But why we develop software is important to why we release it, okay? Because when we discuss why we release it, you can see the reasons we develop it and why what it does drives what we do with the release, okay? For instance, in the case of Google, they don't. In many cases, they get the source code to Gmail for me. Go for it, please. I'm interested. It'd be kind of interesting to read. And a lot of companies make money off support. I mean, they pump out their every six-month release and plop, there you go. Hey, support. Nothing wrong with it, okay? But with open source, it's a little more nebulous. For the users, developers, why are we releasing this in the first place? I mean, master exists. It's always there. We can always get it. Why are we doing it? And there are some real reasons why we want to give people the source code. I mean, it's great stuff. We want to help the planet. We want to give people our wonderful source code. Okay, maybe we have a startup that somebody wants to buy. Nothing wrong with it at all. It's buzzword compliant. We believe that's fair, or we want to promote software freedom. These are real reasons, and I consider them really valid. There's many real reasons why we want to give this code to the community. Okay, and ignoring them and why we're here will result in us coming to the wrong answers, in my mind. So the question comes to when. Okay, and I'm going to say when it benefits the people developing it. And it seems like a simple answer. But I'm going to say the people developing it are the people basically paying or putting in the effort to make sure that the development occurs. I'm going to be careful with that definition. I'm going to call these people stakeholders for the rest of the discussion. They're not the developers. They're not the people who actually pound code necessarily. Okay, and you might say, well, what about these users and what about all of our friends? Without the stakeholders, there is no software. There's nothing. Okay? The users will be indirectly represented by these stakeholders in many situations, if not all. I'm sure that there's going to be some users that are not perfectly represented. But if we ignore the stakeholders, in the end, we ignore the people who are directly supporting the project. Okay? And to me, this is a critical insight. It's obvious when you say it aloud that, you know, the people actually doing the work should be determining when it goes out the door. But it's not obvious. It really, in a sense, you know, it's a critical insight. Yeah?
Excuse me. So you're saying you're calling the development
stakeholder? No, I'm saying stakeholder, when I say developing it, developers may be proxies for the stakeholders, but for instance, for you and I would argue that the stakeholder would be our boss. the real stakeholder. We may represent him, but the real stakeholder in the discussion would be somebody else. We may proxy for him, certainly, and I expect that we will. But the real stakeholder resides probably one level up from us, those of us on the team. We can, but in a lot of situations, we can proxy for them just fine. Okay, but there's a difference between that and the people who actually spend time wiggling their fingers. In particular, they can be stakeholders also. I mean, especially if you're doing it on your own time, your own energy, that gives you your own stake. It's a different thing than the stake of like Red Hat or SUSE's development or, you know, the development that CERNET's doing or the development that Catalyst is doing. All these have different interests behind them, okay? That's where those people are the stakeholders. And we need to make sure their interests get represented. I never said how. I merely said that. Okay? So one of the things I wanted to discuss is, what is the life cycle of a release? Okay? So we've said, you know, well, who and why, but what is it? So there's development, and then what I call the glide slope, which is kind of when you begin to hand over, in a sense. You know, you begin to go through feature freeze, code freeze, and then out into release. And then maintenance and end of maintenance. These define the process of release from cradle to grave, in my mind. It doesn't start at code, it doesn't start at feature freeze. It starts before feature freeze. Okay? So we'll start with development up front. And developers are going to do what they do. We write code, we review code, we make things better. Really. And generally we kind of run amok. This is where feature development should be done, is in this phase. Note the word should. Okay? In reality, things don't always work that way. But we'll go into the glide slope. And it's taken from flying. Okay? Your goal is not to be too high, it's not to be too low, it's to come in just right for a smooth landing. Okay? This is the goal of the release. Much like the goal of your flight is to hit the runway right on the numbers. Okay? Same thing here. So we'll start at the first phase, which is feature freeze. Okay? This is really in a commercial environment. This represents the beginning of the handoff from development to management, in a sense. This is where the code kind of stops, where the ownership of the code kind of transfers from the developers to others. This is the first phase, okay? Typically, you know, it's kind of self-evident, no more features. People ask, what are exceptions? What about an exception? I've never been in a place where there isn't an exception to feature freeze. I just haven't worked in one. I haven't seen a project where there's one. You know, I've been around a lot of projects, I've watched a lot of projects that aren't even mine. Usually something sneaks in. I'm not saying they're good at all. Okay, usually bug fixes tend to go in without many questions, if any, in this phase. And minor improvements, well, maybe. But be suspicious because there be dragons. No, seriously. There be dragons. I mean, you're gonna get in trouble here the more you take on against your glide slope. And the bumpier you make your ride, the more likely you are to run into him. Okay, and he's not your friend. He looks friendly. He's not. Okay, in code freeze, much the same. Except for that, you know, here, really, no changes. Okay, your goal during code freeze is you'd love to see no commits. No nothing. You just want the code to sit there and QA to pound on it and to feel frustrated. That's the best code freeze ever. Okay? Exceptions here to me mean that you're willing to accept a day-for-day slip on the release. Period. Okay? Just a bug, not enough. Things like, oh, it's only a small change, or oh, it's almost done. These are code words for the dragons. Okay? Only critical fixes and only critical things going at this point. It requires a lot of judgment and probably a lot of discipline to do anything at this stage in the game. Okay, you better be sure that it really has to get done at this stage. But there's a reason why we have the stage, because things do come in this late in the cycle. There is a need for this phase. Things do come in that'll break through the freeze. Okay? And it's important to let those things through. So, despite the fact that I'm going to say, I told you so, there's more dragons, they're part of life. Okay? The real question is how to train the dragons. Okay? Because in the end, we have to live with them. Okay? We can't pretend they aren't there. But we can control them and train them. Okay? We need to make sure waivers should say exceptions here. Edit in the slide. From original version. So basically, anytime we need to put one of these in, we should be tracking it as a group. Okay? We need to be finding out, well, is it on track? Or is it really, hey, I got that status report last week and the week before. 1 second here. And I'm not seeing anything in your Git repo. You know, this doesn't look right. It doesn't look on track. Maybe it's not making it. Okay? This is really where we need that discipline. Okay, is in handling dragons. Okay? Especially as you get into code freeze. Is it a day-for-day slip? Okay? We may need to do it by committee. Not sure. But, you know, here's where you begin to talk about your glide slope exit. Yes, that's a road. And yes, those are plane spotters. I think they got a good up-close view. So, policy, things to think about. What about late security issue? What about late-breaking data corruption issue? Late severe regression? I'm going to say you got to decide on what it is. I don't think you can have a hard and fast rule here. But in general, if you're catching stuff really, really late, you need to look at other parts in your process. If you have a lot of stuff coming in at T-minus a week, you have other problems. This is a symptom, not your problem. Okay? If you have a few of these things come in, yeah, that's normal. You're going to have a one or two fly through. But you shouldn't be seeing, oh, T-minus a week, you know, you see this slam of email come through, especially in code freeze. You see that, you've got a major problem. And it's a problem that's systemic throughout your project. And yes, you will see projects that work this way. It happens in real life. It does. People play games of schedule, chicken, and various other things. Oh, he'll slip the release for me. Don't play. Just don't. Okay? Make up your mind depending on what the situation is. Okay? And then actually get that release out the door. Carolyn is by far more expert in this area as far as actually Carolyn and Metz and others. Really, you guys have a much better grasp on this than I ever will. About the logistics of even, we think about releases, oh, you make a tarball, and I know it's far more than that. Far, far more than that. It's a lot of work. And I'm not going to pretend to know it. Okay, but then we go into our next phase here, which is maintenance. Okay, each branch of the repository has a set of policies that govern it. Nobody says they have to be the same. In fact, in many places I've worked, they aren't at all the same. Okay? And we should figure out why or why not. Why wouldn't they be the same? Why would they be the same? There's lots of good reasons for both answers. Okay? But we should have it be driven by going back to why we're doing it. Here, out of slide. End of maintenance. This is always a touchy issue. Okay? People never like seeing stuff that they're dependent on go out of maintenance. And it's kind of a shade of gray. Pardon the bad pun. But, you know, this is where, you know, no more feature backports, no more nothing. Okay? But note that I consider those two shades of gray in of themselves. You know, do we backport features to this or not? Do we backport security to this or not? Or are we just done with it? Okay? And we need to know who cares. Plus, who's paying for it? I mean, let's admit it. This takes time and energy. Even if it's just somebody volunteering, in a sense, they're paying. Okay? There's real work that goes on at this phase. Okay? And this is what each thing we do, each release we cut, each one of these things is a cumulative effort that requires somebody to be behind it. There's no magic button that does this for us. To go back up, there's a question of when to release. And I'll say, go back to why we release. Okay? And it's to benefit the stakeholders. And this is I'll give some examples of policies I've seen and things I've seen go on as I've kind of sat through. I will say what we do today. This is my opinion. Okay? I think we have a 10 to 11 month full cycle. 9 months of development, 1 to 2 months typically a feature freeze, and a 1 week code freeze. This is what we do today on a piece of paper. Okay, we maintain 3 releases concurrently, one with some backports, where some and what's allowed can be a little fuzzy at times, but we kind of have some aesthetic that kind of works for that. And then there's 2 with security backports. So we kind of have a policy today, but I think we've got dragons. I think we've got them in spades. Okay, today's dragons. I need to complete this feature. I think we all know, we've seen it. It happens. Okay? You know, release leaps 2 to 3 months. Maybe somebody needs a release out sooner than that. It happens. But the problem is really the lack of control of the dragons. The lack of the ability to understand where the dragons and how the dragons are acting is what's hurting us. Okay? They run wild. Okay? They have no responsibility to us today. And this results really, I mean, when you put it out on the calendar, you see this results in a release a year, which is what Andrew said on the mailing list, about dead on. I mean, when you look at the calendar, it says so. We aren't spending a lot much time in feature freeze. We're not spending any time in code freeze. And these things are hurting quality. Okay? Along with the long release cycle itself hurting code quality, this is hurting code quality too, because we're not spending time actually hammering out these issues. And when we come out of a long development cycle, things are generally generally rocky. I remember when I worked on Solaris as my primary platform, I could count on the build being broken if I waited more than 6 months to do a build on master. It was clockwork. It might have gone 7, might have gone 5, but it was pretty much, it was money. And you can look for the commits, they're there, because I'd have to go fix it, okay? This is a problem. But, you know, there are some benefits to what we do today. We do it. And we know what we do. Well, for what we do. And it's worked for the last 3 years. You know, we've actually gotten a release out the door for values of work. But I'd say we shouldn't knock that fact immediately. Anything that's gotten a piece of software out the door for 3 years in a row isn't all horrible. Okay, it's not all evil. It's not all bad. But, you know, this is next. So I'm going to move on to the 4 to 6 month cycle type development, okay? Development is really in between the rest of the cycle and this type of a cycle. I actually have seen this cycle in progress at a company before, and I've worked within it. The typical way you really want to do it is you typically want to spend 1 to 2 months in feature freeze and 1 to 2 months in release. You'll end up in a dual update. You'll end up in a dual update mode for about 3 months usually of your six. If you're on a 6 month cycle, if it's less, I can imagine it even being more, or we might have to tune the numbers a bit. But there's hard stops on the there was a proposal for even hard stops on the timelines, i.e. when we enter, that there is no dragons. Well, I believe they exist. And in fact, I even believe they might even be more aggravated because people have said they don't. Okay? 4 to 6 months is a long time if you have to get a feature into the field. Okay? It's not as bad as today. It's still bad. Okay? And if you miss, if you didn't get your stub or your feature in, I've jokingly threatened before when I faced this type of a freeze. If you told me, I would have just thrown stubs in that didn't work, you know, and failed testing and marked the tests as known fail. I'm through feature freeze. At least I have some time to fix things up. It's semantics. Okay, but that's not the type of behavior we want. We want people to behave reasonably. Okay? We don't want developers forking on major features, and I'm going to point out some people who I think have some odd behaviors, Red Hat in particular, and develop backporting kernel patches. And, you know, yeah, we make our Asana version available on git.samba.org, but I think more importantly, if anybody here is, who here has actually looked at a RHEL kernel and taken a look at the kernel patches involved in it? Anyone?
You made me do it.
I know I made you do it. You had no choice. But to say that it's not stock would be putting it mildly. No, but Oracle will pick it apart for you. Oracle provides a Git. But the fact is, the basic concept still applies. Even if you just take a look at the size of the diff we ship, it's probably massive. Wouldn't surprise me in the least. Yeah, you can pull the patch, the giant patch. It's changed. It used to be that way, but it's not today because of various things. But I will mainly say that, you know, because it has the same version number doesn't mean it's the same thing. I'll leave it there, okay? And I'd say it's probably not the best for the community if we have this type of behavior. Go ahead.
Same version number, but the dash release after it matters a lot.
Yes, it does. Okay, so it's just, to me, these are dragons, and they're things we have to avoid. Okay, I'm not going to say the way Red Hat does things is bad. I'm just going to say I don't think it would fit our community well. Okay, and really, we need to acknowledge our stakeholders, okay? Exceptions are part of the life cycle, okay? But we must control them. We must keep them trained, okay? And yes, we may need a dragon trainer or a committee of them, but I contend that not having them around is going to be far worse than trying to contain a few of them and treating them intelligently. Michael. I'm in agreement. Okay, I'm pointing out the problems I'm seeing. I agree with you that, yes, getting all the stakeholders to agree on release timing is a difficult problem, okay? But I will say it has some benefits, okay? It's better than today. I won't even try and say it's not, okay? It meets the needs of at least one of the stakeholders better. We know that because it got proposed. But my question is, can we do better than this? And I posit we can. Okay, I think there's better than this, and I suspect there's much better than this if we put our heads together. I'm only going to propose stuff that I think might be better. Okay, so I'm going to point at a model that I think might be better, but I'm not sold. Okay, I'm just going to throw it there. I'm going to say, let's take a look at the Linux kernel. It's been a successful open source project. The release cycle is somewhere, I think, really around 70 days at the moment on average. Last I checked, over the last 10 versions. I think they hope for an 8-week cycle and they break. A kernel guy could definitely correct me on this. But the interesting thing is, anything beyond branches beyond 2 to 3 behind, gone. They don't support them. Okay? Not in any official way. 2 to 4 weeks of development, 2 weeks of feature freeze, and then some code freeze to top it all off and get out the door. And that's their cycle. They run this in a tight loop. Okay, and when they freeze, they do freeze the, basically their master, although there is a next tree that will go forward. Okay, we could consider that master in a sense. But, the main tree stops taking intake in a weird way. So, here's the problem, though. The fast pace may confuse people, and do the releases have meaning? What's a stable release? And as I said, we don't have a Linus. I've kind of said this several different ways throughout the talk, but we need to decide what we're doing about the lack of that person who can enforce discipline. Okay, and I think it is a problem. Thank you. But I think there's benefits. The fast pace gets the code to the field fast. RCs can be as fast as 2 weeks. Betas, potentially even faster. And in a Linux kernel model in particular, those willing to maintain branches decide how long they live. Okay, if you take a look at the Linux kernel, the stable branches have active maintainers. Okay, that are listed, that are separate from the mainline release engineer, if you consider Linus a release engineer in a sense. Okay, and there's different people who take care of this load. And I don't consider this all bad, because it means that some of that responsibility becomes a little more diffuse. Okay, and people can make different decisions. Okay, and they can assume those costs. I mean, really, if somebody decides they really want to maintain 3.5 and they really want to keep maintaining 3.5 and they can keep up with the security updates, okay. Sure. We want to make sure that their code ends up on our site and that they're working with us. Okay? We as the developers may not love this thought, but I think it's a realistic thought. Okay, especially if you move to a faster release cycle, not every release is going to be a stable release. Okay, for 9 to 12 month release cycles, I won't even pretend. I don't like these. Okay, one of the big pros of going to fast release cycles, like getting an RC out every 2 weeks, is that really you get a chance to get code to the field that has an official tarball, that has an official stamp of some form, and says, hey, go test this. We're working on it. Rah, rah. In a 9 to 12 month release cycle, we don't really have that in the current way we've done it. If we had stronger QA, you can kind of get away with release cycles this long. But if you take a look at people who have release cycles this long, they're either very conservative or they have insane QA. It's one of the two. Or in fact, they have problems of some form. In my mind. Or, you know, they just have so much mass, they can't push releases faster. Microsoft would be an example where just the company's so big, you guys, you can't, and even you're looking to churn faster. I mean, I'm going to point at you, and I'm going to say, even Microsoft's looking to cut their release times down. Okay, so I mean, the industry's coming around, and I would say you guys were on a two-year schedule, and now, you know, I saw the question marks in Tom's schedule, or, you know, at least yearly in there. It may have, but it's nothing official. I'm just saying. It's just, it's a thought. Yeah, it's a future. It's a hope. It's somebody's thought that what might happen. I'm not going to commit, but I'm saying even the most, even people who I would say were the most, you know, okay, let's get to rock stable and then ship it every few years types are coming around to this more frequent schedule. Okay? And I think for many of these reasons, okay, and I'd say this does not meet the team's needs, and we know that from previous experience. Okay, this goes to the first module. This goes to the first problem. Now, there is one type of release we've not discussed at all. Okay, it's what's called feature-based release. Really, releases break down in kind of into two categories. They're either time or feature. Okay. There's a key set of features that must be done. You decide on them, and you don't ship until they're done. Then you do a glide slope out. Yes, sir?
I've done this a number of times.
Okay.
Or other than some things by
choice. Okay, yeah, well, I can tell you what happens with a lot of them. And they do have some benefits. You know, you always have features for your releases. That's great. And they make the release. That's great. But yeah, 4.0 proves the point. I was going right there. I was there. What if it slips? We don't think about what if it never makes it. Got it. What if, you know, they won't admit it slipped? You know, and I'm not saying we had this happen, but people play schedule chicken all the time across companies. Schedule chicken is people not admitting and hoping that somebody else will admit the slip so they don't have to, okay? People do this stuff all the time, okay? Feature-based release is something to be wary of. It can work sometimes, but it is wary. We should be very, very wary if proposed, okay? But really, I welcome you to come up with plans. I've thrown some stuff on the board. I've shown you a way of thinking and a framework to think in here, which to me was the most important part. I'm not saying that we should do what the Linux kernel does. I'm really saying I think it's better than the current proposal. Okay, and I'm throwing another proposal out. But I don't think it's the final proposal, and I hope it's not the final proposal. We can do better. Okay, but we must understand the constraints, and we must keep them in mind at all times. We have to think about who's paying for it, who's working with it, who are the stakeholders, and why does it meet our needs? Okay? And I really welcome discussions on this today and tomorrow. I'd say please stay off Samba Technical with it for a bit. I don't think that this is something that, given that people may want to talk about some internal scheduling stuff and reasons why, that some of it may get a little touchy. I also think the high bandwidth link will probably do you a lot better than the low bandwidth link in these cases. That's my personal opinion. And you'll note that some of this talk definitely has my personal opinion in it. There's a reason why I stepped away. My personal feel, another set of things, most software ships late. Many projects never ship. Okay? And figuring out where it's going, when it's going, how it's going, that's why it's true art to get this stuff right and making sure that we meet those stakeholder needs. Questions?
Great timing.
Yeah.
Are there any
questions? Quite right on.
Yeah, sure. Andrew.
Please.
So what do you see as the key disadvantages to moving to the 6-week cycle? I mean, so, I can see some major issues with what we may promise in terms of maintenance and security support. So I'm curious as to how you felt they were dealt with or not elsewhere.
I'm not. 6 weeks is tighter than almost anything I've seen. My gut says that we may not be able to do enough in 6 weeks. It depends on how long we define the phases and how well we it's not just time, okay? It's an entire process that's defined, okay? It's cradle to grave. It's not, is it 6 weeks, is it 2 weeks, is it 1 week? That's not actually the important part. It's defining the entire process that goes with it. You know, if we have 6 week releases, that's great. Okay, how many of them do we keep in maintenance for security? How many do we, you know, all those policies. What do we do with them? Those are the things that are going to define it to me. Okay, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I don't know. Six may be a good number. Somebody may propose, say, hey, there's a reason why five works better. I don't know. Other questions in the room? Feel free, please.
Yeah,
feel free, Andrew.
I have plenty of views on this. Oh,
yeah. No, feel free. Please raise your hands, others, if you have them.
Yeah. What you talk a little bit about the what we do at the moment, and what's your feeling about the kind of administrative steps and processes that we've got in at the moment? I mean, to get a patch into Samba 4.0 at the moment, you get it into you know, it has to be a security patch. You get it into master. You get it into proposing it. Let's say 4.1. We're not doing security. You get it into we get into master. Mm-hmm. We get it. We do a cherry pick. We pick it up. We put it into a Bugzilla. We find two other people to tag it off. We ask Carolyn to find some time away from her family to go and apply it, to find that the auto build fails, to say, actually, can you please make that patch apply and build, to repeat the process to then have an auto build run and to eventually have it end up in the 4.1 release.
I think, so I'm going to say kind of two things here. One, I think some of the problems come from a large divergence. Mm-hmm. The larger the divergence in the trees gets, the worse your problems get, period. Just, that's reality. Okay, if you told me that I had to maintain three releases, I'd want them to be at 1, 2, and 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'd want them to be as fast as they could be. Because that way I don't have to maintain anything wildly divergent. If I don't have to be, you know, and they all time out really quick. That would be the easiest thing for a developer. Mm-hmm. Okay, or maybe I don't maintain any release. Okay, hey, who knows? But I'm saying that, you know, if I told you, okay, and now Andrew, we have to backport to 3.5, we're all gonna roll our eyes. Mm. And that proves the point. The further back you go, the worse it gets. Mm. Okay, so to some degree, that's why I said the stakeholders who want to hold those trees for long periods of time have to step up in those cases and make things happen. Okay?
So who's currently using our releases?
That's a valid set. These are who's using them and who's working with them are good questions. These are things that we should get a grip on. And I believe I haven't seen Mark's survey because I was in the middle of something else this morning. But
yeah, because I'm having trouble figuring out who as a class actually uses our release tarballs because we put a lot of effort into building them.
Because,
for example, the distributions I'm involved in of Debian and then Ubuntu doing the same work basically finds that we ship every release that's made into unstable. But that's fine. You could ship any release. It wouldn't really matter. If we did them every 6 weeks, if we do them as majors or minors, unstable will have that latest release.
Sure.
Stable has backported patches only with Debian, a Debian bug attached.
Sure.
So doesn't use any of our release work.
This
RHEL basically does the
same thing.
So I'm like two major sources of distributions aren't using our tarballs.
It's a valid question, and it's one that we should pose to a group of people who can answer it.
Okay. Do
Because I don't know the exact answer to that question.
Okay. Does anyone else in the room know about who's
Jose?
Actually...
Michael, please go.
No, I don't.
Okay. I mean, do you say RHEL doesn't use the tarballs?
Yeah, we use the tarball, but we layer a lot of stuff on it.
Once you've chosen a release.
Sure. No, actually.
You don't move to new point releases.
Yeah, we do, actually.
RHEL doesn't, but RHS does.
Does.
Yeah,
actually,
does.
We do.
So, you know, I've changed tarballs at least like 10 times recently. So,
yeah.
You know, it's not every single one, but while we're in the process of putting together a new release, we definitely like I keep going, yeah, 0.15, 0.16, 0.17 until we hit a freeze.
Yeah. So, it depends. I mean, different thing. And I mean, when I was working at MathWorks, we didn't use them mainly just because I knew enough to pull the Git straight off of 3.6 table. Okay, which to actually, no, yeah, I'd pull off of 3.6. I pulled off 3.6 test, pardon. And that was good enough for me, but that's not for everybody. Okay, I acknowledged that when I was working with 3.6. You know, hey, not for everybody. That's fine. Michael?
Yeah, okay, I wanted to respond to one earlier thing. So regarding the process of getting patches into a maintenance release or something, I think that process is almost perfect. So I really think it's good because the only thing is if you say, okay, developers put review tags to a patch and then it audible fails. So then the developer who has put the review tag should make an excuse to Carolyn because he hasn't tested it before, right? And it's good to have that process. Of course, if there's a lot of divergence, there's more effort in backporting patches, but once the backport has been created, it's still good to have two additional reviews on it. I think that's good. And then I wanted to share my... before handing on, I wanted to share my views on one or two of these things. So this whole was triggered by the desire to make our releases more sort of shorter and more reliable. I think it's very good. I also see a lot of benefits of having shorter release cycles. I really think when we firmly try to not allow many exceptions of sneaking features in after we have actually frozen, then each single release should be, and if it's a short cycle, it should be much easier and less effort to do because the divergence is
right.
Smaller.
If we can keep
and,
the divergence
down,
that helps.
I also agree that, so 4 sounded like a good compromise when it was proposed for me because it sounds like, compared to what we now have, reasonably short, but I kind of like the proposal to go to some... 1.5 to 2 month like cycle. We can discuss this. The major problem here is really the, how long is the release supported? And we can't support by default more than 3 in the way we do it now, I think. And I think one very good point that RHS made is we can still pick various of the many releases we'll be doing and say, okay, there is a stakeholder who has an interest in this special release. And then it can be
We can find out
who can maintain that release, and we can support that officially on samba.org if the stakeholder
absolutely. Likes.
So that's a very interesting point. I think that's a good one. So we don't need to support like a whole stretch of releases up to that.
We don't have to support everything forever. Yes, Martin.
Jose?
Actually, Jose, then Martin, please. Yeah.
A half comment, half question.
Sure. How?
At some point, when you keep shortening the release cycles, how is that any different from well-vetted and automatically tested commits? At some point, if the release cycles are short enough, just say, sure, go to master.
The difference is mainly one of, I'm going to say my opinion here, the difference is one of perception and drawing a line. Okay, if I hand out something and I call it Samba version 8.0 RC3, okay, and somebody comes up with a bug and they go, well, you know, I use your Samba 8.0 RC3. I know what they got. And I know what they got. That's good. Okay, now if we had people enthusiastic enough to get involved with Samba 8.0 RC3, you know what? That's a good problem to have.
I think the kernel community does the 2-month release cycle well because it's so big.
Yes.
you know, they have, you know, Greg KH doing the stable releases, and that's most of what he does.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, they do get the distros diving in, so you really do need critical mass, and you need those extra stakeholders. Like, you know, if Ubuntu decide to go with some stable release that then Greg end of lives, then they need to be willing to maintain that.
That's the reason why, if you take a look at the kernel.org maintainers page, which I did before giving the talk, you'll actually see some of the maintainers aren't Greg. He does not maintain every back branch.
Sure, yeah.
There are some of them that have other maintainers because clearly other people have taken an interest to that branch beyond where Greg was interested, and they've said, no, yeah, we're going to push that end of life out another few years because we don't want to see it end of life yet. You know, and so it's an important thing. And, you know, I don't know how accurate those EOLs are. They may push out again. I mean, 2632 said, I think it was got EOL in 2016 sometime. Maybe. Yeah, there's still people supporting 2632. It has a maintainer. Yeah. You can get sick. But it's,
yeah,
okay.
I think it is going to come down to community size. And if the community is only 20 or 30 people, then the ability to pick and choose and maintain branches.
I'm actually going to say it comes down to the will of the community. If the community wants that release to go forward, I don't think you're going to see as much aggressive backporting as you see in the Linux community. I think that what you'll see with those back releases will end up being mainly CVE type fixes and very, very little else, is my actual suspicion. And I think for that, it would actually be good to have a spot. Because remember, if anybody's actually interested in moving forward, there were other points they could have jumped forward and gotten a feature. So I think for us, it could work. I suspect that we would not put as much energy into it as the kernel community would, just because, as you said, we're a smaller community. And people who are making that choice, I think, are doing it mainly to stabilize themselves. And NAS vendors are, I'd say, notoriously conservative creatures. So, I mean, if we said basically, you know, let's say we froze a branch in the end and we said, okay, yeah, it's security only here on out, I bet you there'd be a bunch of people going, yay! I don't know, though. It's a valid question to ask the room, you know, hey, if it goes beyond 8 weeks, then if somebody really likes it, we say, yeah, okay, we're going to throw it into security freeze. Hey, who knows?
Yeah, there's also the other thing that Jose asked about where, you know, why don't people just take master? Well, if you commit a regression, you notice it a week later, mm-hmm, and then you fix it and you push another commit to fix it,
mm-hmm,
and there hasn't been a release in between, mm-hmm, then I'm guessing you're not overly concerned. And if you know a release is coming up,
yep,
and it's got the regression in it, you'll try hard to push that patch to, yep, fix it.
Yep.
But if it's, you know, just rolling master and people are picking it, you know,
yeah, you don't have those obligations.
Yeah, and you don't know what they've got, sort of. As,
yeah,
you said.
It also doesn't allow you to define a feature freeze and a code freeze so the release gets a smooth landing. If you take a look at the kernel community, they spend a fair amount of their time actually in feature and code freeze. I mean, I think it's about 50% of their release cycle, if not more. The actual section where you dump code into on Linus is incredibly small. It's like two of the it's the first two RCs, and that's it or something. It's ridiculous. And they batch up to do it, mind you, but I understand.
Okay, it looks like Ira really hit a nerve here.
I suspected I hit a nerve with this one. Yeah. Yes, this talk was...
I think maybe we should continue at the party, but maybe one more. Because
there's a few... keep running.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, one brief remark here. I mean, speaking of development phase and then feature freeze and code freeze,
mm-hmm,
that's, I mean, all that stuff is only hardly applies or remotely applies to how we work, because people have to be aware that we are mostly, I mean, in full feature development phase all the time in master, and then it's just when we branch, then this
that's what we do. That's what we do today.
Yeah, right. But you can't by no, I mean, the Samba team, because it's such a colorful group of people coming from various stakeholders, and so I don't think we can enforce something like a feature freeze here. So or on master, depends. Just on release branches. So the feature freeze happens by branching in our model, and I think that will should continue.
Or
did you mean otherwise?
In general, I agree that it tends to, you know, feature freeze tends to come with branch. But you know, if we had a bastard who's if we had a few people who were willing to stand up and say, no, we think this will increase quality, you know, I wouldn't oppose it necessarily. I wouldn't say no. I wouldn't say yes. I'd think about it. I wouldn't discard it offhand. I'm just not going to immediately chuck it. Yeah.
Like Linus's branch is a release branch.
Yep.
Whereas.
Yeah, if we did that with master, really stop accepting patches except for that suite, then we can run with master.
Yeah.
But the maintainers have the features. So
yeah, okay. They keep queuing.
And that gets tested during during the release cycle, even it's next.
Mm hmm. Yeah, they effectively branch in a weird way, in their own way.
Maybe I can just close my part because I have to leave now.
Sure, feel free. Feel free to close down the mic, but I have a feeling that I'll keep talking.